Well, there's certainly a busy spring and summer ahead for the Irish Baroque Orchestra. They once again embrace the music of Johann Sebastian Bach, George Frederick Handel, and more of the great composers from the Baroque period. Artistic director Peter Whelan is with me in studio this evening. And whatever about the summer, Peter, I suppose the next few days is where your immediate focus is for, with beyond doubt, I would have thought. The Irish Baroque Orchestra will perform St. Matthew Passion, the Bach Passion in Kilkenny tomorrow, in Dublin on Friday, in Galway on Saturday. Obviously, we're talking about a staple of the Easter calendar here and the Easter liturgical calendar, specifically in the case of the Matthew Passion of Johann Sebastian Bach. What did he do with this particular liturgical text that makes it so special?
It's an extraordinary piece. I've been rehearsing it now for 3 days in a row. We start our concerts tomorrow, but it's just a universe. It's just a huge piece on its own. Maybe a lot of people refer to it as the greatest classical music work. Mm. And of course, it's about the Passion. Of course, it's Johann Sebastian Bach, but maybe it's his greatest work. And it's vast. And it's, as I said, it's his own universe. It's got everything in it. Like you could never explore it to the extent, to the edge of the universe, basically. But yeah, so it's such a huge piece. It's so hard to talk about it because it is basically everything.
Yeah, so what we have here, is it the biblical text from Matthew? What part of the Passion is being told in the Bach version? And is it just the biblical text, or I think he brings in some other texts?
That's
as well,
right. There's we're talking about the biblical part is where Jesus is arrested, the Last Supper, and the Matthew Passion stretches all the way up to where the tomb is sealed, because it was always for Good Friday, and then on Easter then you can celebrate the resurrection. That was the basic plan that Bach had. And yeah, there was a guy called Picander who's also writing kind of more poetic kind of interjections that he put into the text as well throughout. It's just vast. Of course, the central part of it is these chorales that you hear, which are like jazz standards for the Protestant church, basically Lutheran church. They existed from Martin Luther himself wrote some of them, and they're an integral part. And yeah, if you dig into the piece, you find that they're everywhere. And Bach, his genius, is expanding on them in all kinds of amazing ways.
How does we're going to listen to the opening section first of all. Just explain to us how, because he lays out his stable here, really, doesn't he, in this opening part?
Absolutely. I mean, it's vast. The very first movement is just huge. E minor from the very beginning. It feels like it's coming from deep within the earth. You know, the lowest strings of the instruments. Amazing thing is that there's two whole orchestras in this answering each other, two sets of soloists answering each other. So it's as big a structure as existed in the Baroque era. And then in the middle of all of this, these two choirs answering each other, one choir talking about the daughters of Zion and crying for them, and then one chorus asking why they're upset. And then in the middle of it all, there's a cantus firmus, so this really ancient melody that goes right the way through it, but you'd hardly notice it unless you really could study this.
Yeah, you have to look at it very carefully. Now, we won't get the whole 6 minutes and 53 seconds in, but we will get a sense even from the opening minute or so of it, just how big a canvas Bach is using when he's painting here. Just let about 2 minutes of it go there to give us a sense of it. The opening section of the St. Matthew Passion of Johann Sebastian Bach, which will be performed by the Irish Baroque Orchestra in various venues over the coming nights. And Artistic Director of IBO, Peter Whelan, is with me in studio this evening. So I was saying as we were listening to that, so two orchestras, Peter, you have said, two sets of soloists, two choruses, two choirs, effectively. What kind of numbers are we talking about?
Well, it's basically it's kind of a 18th century version of a stereo system, and it, like Thomas Kirke, where Bach worked, there were two separate organ lofts across from each other, answering each other. It's a good question how many people are involved. There's a lot of theories, and we're going back to one of the very first theories about it, that there should only be one singer on each part.
Yeah, so you have one soprano, one alto, one tenor, one bass.
Exactly, that's
but
it.
But you have two sets of those.
Two sets of those across from each other. They're singing all of the choruses, all of the chorales, all of the solos. So it's huge for them. Of course, when the piece was like rediscovered in the 1820s by Mendelssohn, he had absolutely vast forces working. And then the Victorian era became a very popular piece too, but just giant. So we're kind of pairing it back. It's kind of it's now... in its simplest, clean line version, that's what we're trying to achieve with these particular performances. Yeah.
And again, as we think of the idea of, excuse me, we think of the idea of site-specific performance as something very modern. But in fact, when Bach wrote this for the particular church he was in, he was making use of these two organ lofts, and the spacing of the various musicians was very important. One choir and one set of solos in one place, etc. Do you do something similar in the various venues that you go to this time?
That's right. Well, the two orchestras are placed across from each other. So I think for the audience, it'll just be an amazing wash of sound. And you have the questioning groups coming from one side, the various soloists, the various characters coming from different positions inside of the cathedrals that we're playing. I don't think any church in Ireland has got the luxury of two organ lofts on opposite side, but yeah, we'll do our best to kind of recreate.
That kind of sense within it. I was saying to you too, one of the questions that constantly comes up in my mind around oratorio in particular, because oratorio is a type of prayer. It's usually a sacred or a liturgical text, but for us now in the 21st century, it's pretty much a secular activity, a secular entertainment. How do you go about? Is there a balance to be struck there for when you're performing it?
That's an interesting point. Of course, we're performing it in ecclesiastical venues, but as you say, in a lot of respects, it's a secular or a meditative event. I suppose a lot of people enjoy those spaces and come for different reasons, and because the music is as good as it gets, whether you're atheist or religious, or it's still a great work of art that we're dealing with this piece.
And your soloists here are a vocal group called Sestina.
That's right. They're based, in Belfast. Mark Chambers runs them. We've done a lot of work with them. They use a mixture of mostly young professionals and people coming into the industry. It's just a wonderful level of solos, and it's as well they're young and have a really good breath control, because this is a huge thing for all of them. Like, they're all soloists in their own right, and it's like over 3 hours of singing, three nights in a row. So they're like marathon runners, basically.
Yeah, and again, it's really important to just emphasize that fact, because we hear two choruses, but two sets of soloists, but we are talking two sets of four people. We're only talking eight people doing the singing here, which is a phenomenal amount of work for each singer.
Yes, they believe that that's what happened in the 18th century, that it was just one per part. Like, looking as well at we have a lot of information about how Bach operated and put together his cantatas, and they hardly had any time to put things together. I think they're just thrown the music, the parts, with the ink wet on the page. It was just we know this piece really well. I think it was Bach only heard it and performed it maybe four times in his lifetime. We'll have done it much more than that, and it's just amazing how quickly they put it together. Maybe it was very ramshackle performance. Like, we know that Bach complained about the level of his choir. We know that there would have been dogs running around the church, people talking. Like nowadays, people get bored during services or masses, and people could be wandering around the church during this. This piece, as I said, is over 3 hours long, but it was supposed to just sandwich a sermon as well. So it was a really long Good Friday for the congregation, basically. Yeah,
I'm going to skip through past one of the chorales to "So Is Mine, Jesus, Nun Gefangen." This is the point at which, in the Passion story, Jesus has been captured effectively.
Exactly.
Again, you might explain the form here, because he uses all sorts of combinations and variations, Bach, in how he puts the piece together.
This is this particular piece just pairs it back to the atoms of the work. It starts so simply with just these two small notes in the strings that are kind of obsessively repeated, and a beautiful woodwind melody over the top, and then soprano and alto just kind of a lament, just very long lines painted about him being captured, and then this interjection from the other choir, who are in a completely different sound world, just saying, you know, capture him, basically.
And it really is, you know, you get a real sense of how Bach was looking for the drama here, Peter Whelan, you know, with the small instrumentation, the two solo voices, and then the chorus shouting from the other side. He liked the operatic style of that.
Absolutely. So Bach never wrote an opera, but all of his religious music is using those operatic devices all of the time. So he actually was a really dramatic composer. I think as well that the way they presented religious music at the time was much more visceral. That they weren't holding back from the emotions. I think nowadays we're a little bit distant from the texts. They're just kind of you know, said by rote. But back then you could really mean it.
Yeah.
And that's what we get with all of these single singers on each part. Just a lot more of a human immediate emotional connection.
I suppose there are a couple of things you just clarify. Who? What voice plays what role? You know, because you might. I often think, well, who's the tenor going to be here? Is Jesus going to get the tenor role,
yeah,
or who's going to get the tenor role, or what voice is going to be used for Jesus, which you would presume is the main part? Crass about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we have a storyteller called the evangelist, who's a tenor, and sings throughout and kind of sets the scene, and Jesus is sung by a bass. And every time Jesus speaks, he's surrounded. Bach gives him a halo of strings. So we know it's Jesus because it's a low voice. And then suddenly this really beautifully colored text. Whereas when the evangelist sings, it's a dry recitative, which is just like the harpsichord and the organ. So you could really get the contrast between the
two. Storyteller gets just a little bit of a come, but when it's Jesus, he gets the whole shooting.
He's the main guy. Yeah.
Yep. When I'll finish up with what I reckon is probably the best known section. If you hear a standalone piece from the St. Matthew Passion, it's probably going to be a Berma Dich. Explain to us what's going on here as we head into it.
Yeah, this is such a touching aria. Basically, Peter has denied Jesus three times, and he's just feeling just awful. He's feeling so guilty, and this is he's him asking for, begging for forgiveness.
Guilt of Peter, expressed so well by Johann Sebastian Bach in Erbarme Dich there from the St. Matthew Passion. And all of the sections that we heard there from the John Elliott Gardiner recording with the English Baroque soloists. But Peter Whelan and the Irish Baroque Orchestra will perform Bach's St. Matthew Passion tomorrow, Thursday. That's in St. Canice's Cathedral in Kilkenny. They're in St. Patrick's Cathedral in Dublin on Friday, and finally in Galway Cathedral on Saturday. And you can find out full details on IrishBaroqueOrchestra.com.